The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
If you've opened your PG&E bill lately, infuriation, anger, frustration, probably three words that come to mind and a few others we probably can't even mention on the radio. What's going on with Pacific Gas and Electric Company, an organization that in recent years seems to at every turn either be blowing things up or burning things down, though not necessarily intentionally, though you have to wonder at times whether or not a solid lack of due diligence is perhaps contributory toward these problems. In the end, though, the real impact that's being felt is not by PG&E or even necessarily by PG&E's stockholders, but rather by PG&E's ratepayers. Witness the fact that we began 2024 with a hefty rate hike. You undoubtedly saw that when you opened up your January bill. We've barely made it through the first quarter of the new year, and here again PG&E comes, not even with hat in hand unless it's to collect money, before the PUC to get another rate hike approved. All of this against a backdrop of $2.24 billion, that's B, billion dollars in profits last year alone. With some insights, Mark Toney joins us, Executive Director of TURN, the Utility Reform Network. And Mark, thank you so much both for your hard work and your time as well. Give us some perspective. Folks all across Northern California are wondering, what is going on here? And will this slow drip, drip, drip of rate increases ever pause to allow ratepayers to catch their breath?
Thank you, Craig Roberts, for having me on, and I appreciate the service you do by taking up this topic. It is absolutely outrageous that PG&E bills in 2023 went up by 33%, and the blame lies squarely with the California Public Utilities Commissioner. The five commissioners who have the authority to say yes or no, and they have been saying yes far too often, which is why we've seen these outrageous rate increases. What was the most infuriating thing about the rate increase last week is that the Public Utilities Commission put it on the consent calendar, which means no discussion. It is buried with 40 other items in a single vote. I believe that the commissioners owe ratepayers an explanation for why a $5 increase on top of the $38 increase in January, why on top another increase on top of the, as you mentioned, $2.24 billion record-breaking profit last year. And it feels like the ratepayers are feeling all the pain, and the shareholders, investors are reaping all the gain.
I've talked to neighbors when we've sort of compared notes in terms of bills, and I find an interesting trend. Some have said, you know, I looked at my bill year over year, and we've tried to do our due diligence in not turning all the lights on, not keeping the furnace running at, you know, 90 degrees and things of that sort throughout the winter season. And I noticed that my use of both natural gas as well as electricity year over year is about the same, but then a few kilowatt hours or therms of use. And yet I open my bill and I find that the bill is $120 more this year over last year. Now, we know inflation has impacted every aspect of every single service provider and industry, from the grocery store to restaurants and on down the line. But how does PG&E justify these enormous rate increases? And I know a lot of the language is, well, we're using the money because we're trimming trees and we're trying to reduce the number of fires that get started because of PG&E lines coming in contact with combustibles and so on and so forth. But yet at the same token, we're seeing PG&E enjoy some incredible profits. And while I don't decry the shareholders from getting a little bit of money, at some point we've got to admit this is beginning to break the backs of hardworking California families.
You're absolutely right, Craig. And here's the situation. PG&E right now has a credit card with no limit and a guarantee that somebody else, that is the ratepayers, are going to pay it. One example, they were authorized to spend about $5 billion for wildfire tree trimming and other measures in 2020 to 2022. $5 billion authorized, they spent $14 billion. This is what I mean, $9 billion overrun, cost overrun. That is outrageous. We have a broken system, and we got to fix it. Right now, there are no limits to how much PG&E can ask for or how many times a year, and there are absolutely no limits to how much the Public Utilities Commission can authorize in rate increases. That is why TURN is pushing for a new state policy at the legislature that would cap future rate increases at no more than the cost of living adjustment provided by Social Security every year. Now, what we're talking about is if that wasn't in fact last year, the Social Security increase was about 3%. Okay? That meant that instead of bills going up, you know, double digits, they would have to go up no more than 3%, because that's reasonable. Right now, we have been getting double-digit increases year after year after year. Customers are to the breaking point.
And when folks are making decisions, tough decisions, can we put food on the table or can we pay the electric light bill to keep warm? And maybe you have a family member who is an invalid, that comfort and warmth is critically important. Maybe there's medical equipment that needs to be running. And so, you know, you're constantly using energy. And when folks are being forced to make those kinds of choices, it's criminal. And I think the thing that's most disturbing, and maybe you can expound upon this, Mark, for our listeners, and that is the notion that there seems to be no guardrails, meaning that, as you've suggested, every time PG&E goes before the California Public Utilities Commission, that's an organization that's supposed to be charged with providing oversight. And I would suspect a big part of that oversight is protecting the rate users, protecting the customers. And yet it seems as if no request is ever denied or rejected. I've even talked to some folks that are looking at another issue coming before the state PUC, and that is AT&T wanting to extract themselves from providing basic telephone service across the state, which has a lot of people in rural areas terrified that if they have a emergency, if there's a medical emergency or a fire and there's a problem with the cell phone system, that they would be absolutely helpless. Or in the case of an earthquake or another natural disaster where the capacity of the cell system to be able to handle all of that traffic just simply isn't there. People say, when the lights go out, my power goes out, my phone goes out. What do I do in an emergency? How do I call police, fire, or an ambulance? And there's already fear that the PUC is going to rubber stamp that as well. So here's an organization that seems to be doing more to serve the best interests of the utility companies than the taxpayers and citizens of California. How do we go about putting some teeth into making them toe the line and actually start representing Californians?
There's a couple of things that you can do. One is, I got to tell you, TURN is fighting extremely hard to keep AT&T's obligation to provide basic telephone service, to keep the essential landline network operating. I will tell you that over 5,000 individuals have already gone to the CPUC website to protest this, and it makes a difference. So that's one thing you can do, is let your voices know about PG&E rate hikes, about AT&T landline at the PUC. But there's something else you can do that's even more important. The governor needs to hear about this. The governor needs to hear from you. The state senators, your state assembly members need to hear from you. Because you know what? They have authority over the CPUC. If the CPUC is not doing it right, if you think there should be a cap on future increases of no more than Social Security, then please let them know. We need limits. This world where there are no limits, who knows how high? Right now, the average PG&E bill is pushing $300 a month. I mean, that's outrageous. It used to be $100 a month for a lot of people. And that's on a good, $300 is on a good month. So we have to start making, you have to start making skyrocketing utility bills an election issue. An issue that, just like homelessness, just like crime, you know, it's got to be one of the top issues. I will tell you that last year, PG&E disconnected over 180,000 families because they fell behind in their bill, and 40,000 of them did not get reconnected. What that tells me is that these connections are a driving force adding to homelessness. It's also causing people to have second thoughts about getting an electric stove or electric or even electric vehicle, because people are starting to worry that their operating cost, their monthly cost, is going to be more than if they stick with the polluting fossil fuels. We cannot punish people for doing the right thing. We should be rewarding people and saying, when you switch to electricity, your bills will go down, not your bills are going
to
go up.
And speak to that, if you would, because there's kind of a story behind a story that perhaps listeners are not familiar with. We all know that there's been a strong push both throughout the Bay Area, the state, and the nation to move towards so-called clean energy and get out of the internal combustion engine automobiles and move more towards electricity, although even the production of electricity requires, you know, the burning of some fossil fuels. Yes, we have hydro, we have limited amount of nuclear, and we use things like natural gas and wind farms and solar. But to the point of solar, there have been a large push for more and more homes to become as independent from the grid as possible. In fact, even contribute to some of the stresses of the grid by going solar and having the ability to sell back the unused power to the grid so that the homeowner would realize a savings on their enormous investment. The state would benefit, the homeowners would benefit, we all would benefit. Our conversation with Mark Tunney, Executive Director of TURN, the Utility Reform Network, continues in a moment.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Welcome back to the conversation. Mark Tunney, my guest, Executive Director of TURN, the Utility Reform Network, talking about the outrageous increases in PG&E billing costs, two rate hikes since January, and we're not even halfway through the month of March, hardly. And then you add to that a proposal by AT&T to eliminate plain old telephone service. Mark, about a year ago, there was a change in how the NEM regulations work that significantly decreased the amount of compensation per kilowatt hour that could be sold back to the grid. At a time when California's electric use is on the increase, home construction is on the increase, the purchase of EVs is on the increase, so the demand for power is going up. And it almost seems as if there was a built-in disincentive that said to ratepayers, yeah, we'd like you to go solar and become more independent, we just don't want to pay you for it. And I think a move like that runs contrary to even the statements that the governor has been making about, we don't want to have any gasoline vehicles by 2034, things of this sort. And yet, if you're not providing the means by which that could happen, if you're disincentivizing people who wish to invest in clean energy, it seems to me that a lot of this, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Mark, but it seems like a lot of this circles back on the notion that PG&E is just going to extract their pound of flesh one way or another, and the PUC, who's supposed to be protecting us, is instead sitting right alongside them, as almost as if they're the members of the board of directors of PG&E. Am I right?
You're absolutely right to bring up this issue. Let me tell you something, Craig. What TURN supports is solar policy that gives people incentives to have solar plus storage, plus battery storage, because that's where the real need is. Believe it or not, we have a lot of solar in the daytime when the sun is shining, okay? Sometimes an overabundance. That's not as valuable as the batteries, because it turns out that every single day, the sun tends to go down. And when that happens, the solar production stops. And if you don't have a battery, you have to use the grid and tax all the grid. But if you have a battery, then you are contributing to the solution. So I think a lot of what you saw in the change was saying, you know, folks, we're going to reduce the incentives just for solar alone, because what's really valuable is the storage, and we're trying to push people into storage. So that's what Turner's been supporting, is let's get more storage for those hours when the sun is down.
And, you know, I think that's also equally important, Mark, because we're both folks that live here in the Bay Area. We know that there are storms that we've seen in recent years that have a propensity to interrupt power. We know certainly the threat of a major earthquake and what that might mean. And you could run into a scenario where there could be tens of hundreds of thousands, upwards of millions of customers who could be left without power for days or weeks should a major earthquake interrupt the grid, and it take a protracted amount of time for PG&E to restore power. And if there isn't solar and the backup capacity through batteries, as you suggest, to be able to help sustain people through the nighttime hours, it would create absolute pandemonium and chaos. Many of us remember the difficult time in the days immediately following October 17th of 1989. Now, just imagine an earthquake of that magnitude, not down in Santa Cruz, but a bit closer here, like along the Hayward Fault Line, that could potentially impact millions of people. And instead of the PUC, PG&E, and the state doing more to create a greater sense of self-reliance and independence, we're doing just the opposite. We're almost punishing people by saying we're going to lower the compensation so low that it won't make sense for you financially to invest this amount of money. And so I just have to wonder if it's almost a sense of a disingenuous approach, not only by PG&E, but even by state leadership right now, as to how this whole issue of power in California is being addressed.
Well, we've got to look. Not everybody is able to take advantage of solar. Renters, for instance, which is almost half the residents of California, rent their homes, don't own them, live in multi-unit homes. A lot of reasons why not solar is not available for everybody. I will tell you that in addition to storage, that is why we want to retain the landline network, because the landline network has central battery backup, which means your landline works when there's no power. Your cell phone doesn't work because the cell towers have been knocked out. Cell towers need power. If they don't have electricity or their backup generator isn't working, there's no cell service. So all these things work together. We need backup energy and we need backup communications.
California is often pride itself on the way in which we have been on the leading edge, the cutting edge of advancements in telecommunications and technology and computing and all of that. But it seems like these two very basic areas, and let's face it, Mark, we're talking about technologies that are 100, 120 years old. And yet there are aspects in which California still seems to be acting like it's 1924 as opposed to 2024 in the way it approaches some of these very fundamental basic services that today, let's face it, are as ingrained and as necessary to the maintaining of life itself in so many cases. And yet that point seems to be lost on state leadership and certainly on the board of directors for PG&E and AT&T.
I would say that the fundamental problem is that there is too much left up to the market, to the decisions of these private corporations and their shareholders, and not enough accountability demanded and enforced by our government agencies that the public depends on to protect us. We're living in a world where people complain about rising homelessness and poverty, but don't complain as much about rising concentrations of wealth. I guarantee you that any city that has the worst homelessness problem, let's take San Francisco, scratch the surface, they also have the greatest concentration of wealth and power. These things go together. They're the opposite sides of the same pole. If we want a more fair society, we have to have agencies, regulatory agencies, that are willing to exercise their authority and say, you know what, we're setting limits to how much profits you can make. As you said, there's a reasonable amount, fine, but you can't have ratepayers, you know, pay for everything all the time. How about the shareholders, since they got record profits, how about they pitch in and cover some of the costs? You know, when there's a cost overrun, Tern has a bill that when there's a cost overrun, shareholders have to pay 50% of it instead of 100% for ratepayers. Okay, we're talking about partnership, sharing, sharing the burden. That's what Tern is fighting for. Sharing the burden. It shouldn't be 100% on ratepayers.
And the other word I think that that comes into the conversation, Mark, as our time winds down, and that is sure. Accountability. You know, there's always hesitation to say, well, if we take a private company and make it public, my goodness, do we really want the government running things? And we know their history of foibles and fumbles and, you know, mismanagement and malfeasance and all of that. And I get that point. But at the same token, when we're talking about critical services wherein people do not have other options. Let's face it, if you don't like your grocery store and what they charge for meat, you can go across town to a competitor and likely save some money and find just as good quality. You have options. But when it comes to things like telephone service, electric service, even if they've talked about some of these competing so-called third-party vendors, green, but it still has to come through the same distribution service. It still all eventually sits underneath the umbrella of PG&E. And if there is not a greater sense of accountability, these organizations that out of the necessity of what they do and how they do it, you can't have 10 wires coming to your house for 10 different choices. But because of the nature of what they do, that puts them in that unique monopolistic category. I think there needs to be a greater sense of accountability, and the accountability needs to come right back square to the people that pay for the service. And I think you're right. A little bit of shared pain. Listen, we don't have any choice but to use PG&E for power in Northern California. But if you're investing in PG&E, oh, that's a choice. And you can choose how much risk or not to take any risk at all. And that ought to be baked into this.
Exactly. What we're talking about is we are all captive customers of PG&E. They provide an essential necessity that no one else does. I will tell you this. People are starting to wonder if what PG&E charges $300 a month for electricity, that same amount of electricity would be about $125 a month for SMUD, Sacramento Municipal Utility District. And a lot of people are starting to look at that and say, if PG&E cannot get their act together, we need to look for a different model. I keep hearing that over and over again.
Yeah, and yours is a good point to end our discussion on, that there are, in fact, municipal or more private style power providers that manage to get the same amount of electrons into homes, turn the light bulb on just as bright, but for a half to a third of the rate. So you have to wonder, they're managing to do it. What secret formula that they have that PG&E has never figured out? And I think we, at the core, Mark, know the answer to that question. Finally, if folks want to get involved, you've suggested writing the governor, certainly going online. There is an open comment period right now, particularly in relationship to the very issue before the PUC regarding the elimination of all telephone service. That doesn't mean cell phone service, but all of your landlines. So people that, mom and dad, that aren't cell phone friendly, live in an area that don't get reliable cell phone service, people with burglar alarms, all of those folks that rely upon what they call POTS, plain old telephone service, for a lifeline, that is at risk, and it's urgent that you reach out to the PUC, go online, and comment regarding your concerns for that. And then, as well, separate comment in relationship to what's happening with these ongoing rate hikes. And, you know, I think you're right, calling the governor and Sacramento to step in and say the PUC 99% of the time always votes on PG&E's side, begging the question, so who's really looking out for us?
And the last thing I want to say is, if you want to know what you can do to fight PG&E, hold them accountable, fight AT&T, hold them accountable, sign up on the Tern website, TURN.org, because we will give you updates when bills come up and you can comment, when there are new hearings, when there are opportunities for public engagement, you will be the first to know.
And I want to underscore that, Mark, because so often I will hear people that will say, I looked at my PG&E bill. What happened? Well, there was one news story and they didn't happen to catch it. And exactly. A lot of times, you know, this goes on under the cover of darkness. If you sign up at turn.org. You can be not one of the last to find out when you open your bill, but instead one of the first to know what's coming that will empower you to be able to speak out. So we urge you to get involved, be a participant, sign up, stand with them, volunteer. Take back our power in the state of California, because if you don't do it, you're going to wind up going to bed every night by candlelight. TURN.org. That's TURN.org. And our thanks to the executive director of the Utility Reform Network, Mark Tunney, for being with us today. Mark, thanks so much for the time and the education.
Thank you very much, Craig. Happy to be on anytime.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Those who have loved ones currently in the hospital, who have perhaps lost a loved one, it raises many of the why God questions. Why does God allow things to happen like this? And when we're in these kinds of times, whether we're talking about the tragedy of what unfolded yesterday in Boston, to the loss of a child, to maybe just the day-to-day challenges that we face in life, oftentimes we feel as if we're kind of groping about, and we're wondering in the middle of the darkness of our experience, how do we find God? Coincidentally, a new title of a book called Finding God in the Dark, and it's co-written by my next guest, Ted Gluck. Ted, of course, has been on the program previously. We talked to him some months ago regarding his best-selling book, Dallas and the Spitfire. Back again to join us today, and Ted, it's always great to have you on the show.
Hey, Craig, thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Boy, the timing of our conversation today in the wake of the tragedy of Boston yesterday, again, it just touches on so many levels emotionally and spiritually. Kind of give me your overall sense, particularly in the spirit in which you wrote this book along with Ronnie Martin. We're in these moments, be it the tragedy of yesterday to simply maybe losing a job, losing a loved one. We grapple with this sense of where God, why God?
Yeah, we really do. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. These are existential questions. You know, these are questions that strike to the core of our existence, and they really strike to the core of how it is that we think about God. And you know, as I prepared for the show tonight, I knew you were going to ask me about this, and I was talking it over and praying about it with my wife, and I was reminded of the verse in 1 Thessalonians that says, you know, as Christians, we don't grieve like those who have no hope. And, you know, but we still grieve, you know, and whether you're intimately involved in a situation like this or whether you're just kind of observing it from the outside, I mean, you're grieved. And I'm reminded of the doctrine of total human depravity, you know, the idea that we're all sinners in this world with sick hearts, and that there's no hope for us, and there's nothing good apart from Christ. And I think, you know, what you take from this event, I mean, you watch the media and you hear things like, you know, we're going to do everything we can, and, you know, there's all kinds of kind of governmental / military finagling going on, and on one hand you root for that and you're hopeful that something will be done, but, you know, as Christians we know that apart from the cross and apart from Christ, you know, there's not a good answer. You know, there's not a great hopeful thing that Obama or anyone else can say to people to really make them feel better. So, you know, I think for us, maybe the takeaway is an opportunity to recognize the sin in our own hearts. And, you know, much of my book deals with that, you know, this idea that, you know, it wasn't until I really humbled myself and threw myself at the foot of the cross that I had any joy and any peace in this life. And I think we're reminded that we don't find our joy and peace in circumstances or situations. You know, it isn't God's job to make everything perfect for us. But he does find us, he does seek us out, and he does give us the opportunity to humble ourselves and find joy and peace in him.
You know, what you say, I know, even with my listeners eavesdropping on this conversation right now, we resonate with what you say. We certainly readily give mental assent to your observations. And yet, oftentimes, isn't there that disconnect that we experience, meaning that we understand, for example, if we want to just kind of coldly in a very calculated manner dissect what transpired yesterday, it is, you know, man's depravity, it is separation of God from God by sin, it is our inclination to do wrong and evil and the influence of the enemy in our lives. We understand all of that, and we can certainly, in many ways, kind of pigeonhole or categorize the pain of yesterday into those categories. We give complete, total mental assent to those realities. And yet there's this disconnect where emotionally, though, we're still saying, but wait a minute, God, I mean, aren't you supposed to come in and kind of, you know, save the day? We look at this and say, well, you know, of all the people that died yesterday, three all told, why did one of them have to be an 8-year-old boy? And suddenly now we're kind of emotionally and spiritually wrestling with God over these things.
Yeah, we are, you know, and I fully agree. And I think, you know, for those of us who grew up Christian or grew up in evangelical homes like I did, I mean, I think I spent a lot of years just intellectually assenting to things and not really feeling or experiencing them. And there's this strange tension in the church where, you know, you're clinging to truth and you have biblical truth, but yet you still want to experience things. You want to feel comforted. And, you know, for me, I think the Bible is full of examples of people who, you know, cling to Christ and cling to God in the midst of really horrible things that are happening to them. And on one level, you don't really maybe find comfort in their stories, but I find comfort in the idea that there's a model for how we can cling to the Lord in those times, how we can cry out to the Lord, how, you know, King David, who, you know, the Bible says was a man after God's own heart, but was also this horrible sinner. You know, he was an adulterer and a murderer, and he has the audacity and the courage, really, to ask God for a clean heart. And then he asked God to restore his joy. And this is, you know, when people are pursuing him and chasing after him to take his life, you know, he even clings to the Lord for joy in that. And, you know, as to how that comforts, you know, someone who's grappling with the reality of yesterday, I don't know, but I'm glad it's there. And I'm glad, you know, the Bible gives us a model for how we're to do that. And I've found, I mean, my experience has been that there's really been no earthly comfort outside of that. And, you know, sometimes we can't explain these things away. We can't, you know, God doesn't let us know immediately why it's happening. But that feeling of joy and peace, even in the midst of life's terrible storms, I mean, that's something that experientially we can look to the Lord and just say thank you.
There's one thing, though, that tends to kind of complicate this, and after a brief time out, I want to kind of dig deeper. We spoke of the mental assent to what we understand to be true from God's perspective, from God's Word. Then there's kind of the emotional struggles that we go into, where we understand intellectually what's going on, and yet emotionally still there's that sense of disillusionment and fear and doubt and unbelief. The third aspect that kind of complicates this scenario is the big cover-up, and we'll talk about that when we come back after a brief timeout. Best-selling author Ted Kluck is with us today, a look at finding God in the dark. I'm Craig Roberts, back with more of the conversation as Lifeline continues.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Continue our visit with best-selling author Ted Kluck. He, along with co-author Ronnie Martin, have written a new book called Finding God in the Dark. Now, we talked a bit about that sense of giving mental assent to what we know are the realities of what's going on in these kind of circumstances, Ted, and yet oftentimes being just overwhelmed by emotional senses of doubt and fear and disillusionment. But then there's kind of the other third item that I think tends to complicate this, and you talk about it in the book. It's something that we evangelicals in particular seem to be very adept at, and that is kind of faking our way through pain. But, you know, painting on the smile and getting past the greeter at the door at church on Sunday, or, you know, giving the obligatory, how are you? I'm fine, thanks. How are you? When, in fact, we're really not. And I'm wondering if sometimes that sets up a barrier that really blocks us from the ability to deal with how we're feeling and kind of find the sort of a peace and relief that we seek.
Yeah, I think it absolutely does. And I think, you know, I wrote about it in the book. I was absolutely guilty of that for so many years. You know, the issues were different for me in that, you know, our hard times, our dark places, if you will, were infertility, a failed adoption, some vocation-related failures that I was experiencing. And instead of, you know, being humbled and clinging to the cross and those things, for a lot of years, I just got more bitter, you know, more bitter, more cynical. But week after week, day after day, you know, Sunday after Sunday, I would go into church and, you know, I was everybody's buddy and the back slapping lobby guy with a smile for everybody. But inside I was really dying, you know, and I was really struggling with, you know, how do I love a God who would put me through this, quite frankly, was my thought process. And it was really tough, you know, and thankfully the same institution that was hard for me in that, the church, it was tough to go to church and it was tough to see everybody else I thought prospering, you know, while I was kind of circling the drain, I thought. But it was that same institution that ended up being, you know, such a help and such a comfort for me as the Holy Spirit pursued me out of that.
I guess the irony is that a lot of us are often going through this, whether it's the way in which a whole community suffers, such as in the wake of the Boston bombing, or individual families. Maybe it's the loss of a loved one, the loss of a job. As you point out in your case, it was an adoption that right on the cusp of everything coming together, your little Ukrainian daughter, who was literally the sister of one of your adopted boys, another couple stepped in, and the law did what it did thousands of miles away, and that whole adoption process fell apart. That created a great deal of pain in your life. And I guess maybe the issue oftentimes here is when we're going through pain or fear or doubt or disillusionment, we want to keep up a happy face. You know, nobody typically posts on Facebook what a terrible day that they're having or what an awful meal that they had. We all tend to kind of want to be happy and sort of, you know, put on the dog, so to speak. And yet behind that mask oftentimes lurks an awful lot of pain.
Yeah, that's so right, man. I think oftentimes we're our own best press agents, and you know, from being in Christian media and Christian entertainment as I am, you know, there is this often kind of creepy, you know, motivation to self-promote, and I found myself doing a ton of that, you know. Again, on Facebook, my Facebook persona was, you know, I was this happy, successful guy with a great family and you know, all kinds of success and all kinds of exciting things happening. But you know, for anybody who knew me then, or anybody who was close to me then, you know, the opposite was really true. And it wasn't until, you know, I heard some convicting preaching. It wasn't until I, you know, I went to some friends of mine in the church, a pastor and an elder, and just said, "Look, I'm struggling here. You know, I'm really dying here. I'm really bitter, and I need your help." You know, thank God, you know, for me, that the Holy Spirit pursued me in that way and kind of led me to do that. Because I think even though the circumstances really haven't changed, you know, this book isn't one of those stories where, you know, we pray a couple of times and then we get rich and have a bunch of kids and everything starts going right for us. You know, the circumstances are the same, essentially. But Christ has given me a lot of joy and a lot of peace in the midst of that. So I'm thankful.
What's the big takeaway? As both you and Ronnie have shared a lot of personal pain in this book, what are you hoping to be the big takeaway for readers and for our listeners tonight?
Yeah, you know what? I think a couple of things. Number one, we can feel so alone in our churches when we do struggle and when we are in dark places. And Ronnie and I hope that this book would kind of be the friend that we don't have in churches, you know, the person who's willing to be honest about their own struggles and their own sins and their own, you know, dark places. So hopefully it'll be a comfort to people on that level. But I think the other takeaway really is just a simple presentation of the gospel. You know, that if we humble ourselves in the sight of the Lord and we acknowledge our sinful hearts and our brokenness, that he'll lift us up, you know, and he'll redeem us and he'll give us peace and he'll give us, you know, the clean hearts and the joy of our salvation that David talks about in Psalm 51. And, you know, I think in different ways and in different struggles, Ronnie and I have both experienced that, and we wanted to, you know, to write the book as a really an outpouring of thanks to a Lord who would do that for us, you know, a couple of really sinful, screwed up guys.
We have a lot of observers right now who they themselves are asking questions, who do not currently have a relationship with the Lord. And I know it's easy sometimes to come up with pat answers, but from a sincere standpoint, as maybe people out there who are not believers are seeking answers and asking the why God questions as well, what do you tell these people in terms of how they can find God in the dark?
I think keep asking and keep seeking, and, you know, the Holy Spirit will find you. You know, I think, you know, we serve a Lord who finds us and who pursues us and who loves us enough to, you know, to come after us at times. And, you know, I think if people are asking questions, that's a great sign. You know, I don't think you get anywhere in this life without asking the hard questions. And you know, again, you know, there's this weird tension in the church where you're just so, sometimes you feel like you're supposed to smile and show up and everything will be great for you. But, you know, it really wasn't until Ronnie and I started asking those hard questions that that we got any peace. And so I would say keep asking. I would say, you know, search for truth. I mean, I think we live in a culture where it's very cool and it's very sexy to be journeying and never arrive anywhere. It's cool to be a seeker, but not a pursuer of truth. But I would say, you know, seek hard after truth in Scripture and see how the Lord reveals himself to you.
A look at finding God in the dark. Ted Kluck, along with Ronnie Martin, the authors of this new book. And the book, by the way, is recently published by, I got to get my cheaters on here. Boy, reaching that age, are you, Roberts? Bethany House Publishers, and you can find it at bookstores throughout the Bay Area. You can also get it through Ted's website at tedkluck.com. And our thanks again to Ted Kluck for visiting with us in this segment of Lifeline. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Lifeline. Thanks so much for being with us. And if there was anything you heard on today's show that you'd like to hear again or share with a friend, grab a copy of the Lifeline podcast. Simply log on to KFAX.com. That's KFAX.com for the Lifeline podcast. Our producer is Wanda Sanchez. I'm Craig Roberts. Till next time round, remember, just don't keep the faith. Get out there and share it and make it a great evening. So long.
Opinions expressed in the preceding program do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership, staff, or management of KFAX. Copyright Salem Communications, all rights reserved.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.